Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome on into the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante, the only Yankees who matter for the next 3 weeks of spring training. Carlos Rodon and Nestor Cortez. How do they bounce back? How do they look? Do they surrender home runs to the first batter and final batter they face over the course of an outing? If they look healthy, that's good. If they give up bombs to everyone and sit 4 miles an hour below where they should be, that is, could be tinkering, could be bad. That's the thing. We're going to talk Carlos Rodon today because, again, game by game, does it really matter? Not so much. How do these players look and how are they able to maintain their stuff and how are they getting ready for the season? That's important. And when you put as many eggs as the Yankees have in Carlos Rodon's basket, we're going to have to overanalyze what he does. I am still thinking positively. I see the comments saying you got to trade Spencer Jones for Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease isn't the sure thing that we want him to be. Blake Snell isn't the sure thing that we want him to be. I would rather see Will Warren than trade Spencer Jones for Dylan Cease. But that said, I have to trust Carlos Rodon more than I currently do. Spring training might not be for everyone to be throwing their top velocity, but when you're someone like Rodon who has to come into this season looking strong, I'd like to see that 97 in a game instead of in a bullpen that I just read about. But we'll talk about all the finer points. This is not to spoil anything. We'll talk about Ben Verlander and the disingenuousness with which he addressed Rodon. We'll talk about the interview. We'll talk about the stuff getting downgraded. Plus Spencer Jones, demoted without whiffing even once. Buster only restarts the Mets Soto buzz. And imagine if Yoshinobu Yamamoto's start on Wednesday came as a Yankee. Holy, it's not really that much fun to be a fan of this team sometimes because of the discourse. You've seen it with Soto already, even though Soto just wants to play and just wants to play for the Yankees. Thank you for joining us again. 2 o'clock Eastern, every Monday, every Thursday. We are on all podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify. Please drop us a review there. Mailbag question in your review if you want us to answer it on a future show. And subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please give us a thumbs up if you want. We'd love if you wanted to do that. We see a lot of our regulars in the chat today. You're all the best. Thank you for returning. Thank you for seeing us here. Make sure to tell your pals that we do a stream. Thomas Carinante, welcome to the show. You've got, I believe, this is the first time we've ever done this, an offer for the fans.
Oh, have you guys heard? DraftKings is here. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This offer is for you. If you are a potential first-time user at the DraftKings Sportsbook, please make sure to get your first bet on them, on the house. New customers will get what's called a second chance bet, previously in the business referred to as a risk-free bet, up to $1,000 when signing up with our promo code YanksGoYard. That means if your first bet loses, you will get your full wager returned to you as a bonus bet. Again, up to $1,000. That's one with three zeros. Pretty substantial. Signing up with our code YanksGoYard not only covers that first bet, but it gets you access to daily rewards, profit boosts. They drop them right in your little folder tab. You can have a good time with your betting journey. Makes it all the more interesting. So if you're looking to join DraftKings, download the app, register with our code. Once again, that is YanksGoYard. And make sure that first bet is covered. This offer is only available, once again, to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode descriptions for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Yeah, man. You know, I was just I was on Instagram earlier. Love Instagram now. The Reels. Even though they ripped Reels off from TikTok, which I just learned. I don't know shit about social media, but man, Carlos Rodon is that Inception meme where Leonardo DiCaprio is like, "How can I know you can deliver?" And the guy's like, "You don't, but I can." So do you want to take a leap of faith? And that's what it is right now, man. That there is nothing we can do. Obviously, the discourse is the discourse. We wrote yesterday that fans are fed up. I don't think that was our direct point of view, but you go on social media and you see that people are very upset to see him give up the first pitch home run to Yandy Diaz after ostensibly skipping a spring outing in between to do a 55 pitch live batting practice. Trying to stay as positive as we possibly can. There's no going back. There's nothing we can do. We need Carlos Rodon. Carlos Rodon needs us. Sinking more of that negative energy in there is not going to help. And it is what it is. Like, if he's going to work through stuff and it's going to have to be through spring training and that's going to have to be ugly for the time being for him to get to where he needs to be, then I guess sure. But, you know, we will save the true harsh judgments and assessments for, you know, I would say after the first month of the regular season. I think that at that point, that'll be over 2 months of him trying to get back on track. You know, he seemingly this offseason was unabated. There was no injuries. There was no issues. And he got to recover and stay on his workout regimen, which was not the case last year. So, growing pains. I know, look, these shouldn't be happening. So $162 million expenditure that we thought was for the most part ironclad outside of him, you know, dealing with injuries. We always knew that was a risk. We talked at length about how, look, this is what you got to gamble on. Like, this guy has ace potential, but might miss time with injuries. We did not, however, expect for him to turn into one of the worst pitchers we've ever seen, which happened in first spurts last year and is not off to the greatest of starts this spring, but this is it, guys, and the Yankees are not going to right this wrong by trading future, you know, cornerstone pieces like Spencer Jones. If anything, they'll just blow more money to figure it out, but also that's probably not happening either, so we got to hang out here for a little while and watch it unfold.
Yeah, I mean, I hope everyone's aligned on this, but I don't need to see him throw a 98-mile-an-hour fastball just to prove to me he can do it and hurt himself in a game that doesn't matter. So for now, I'm going to trust Rodon's process, like you said, because we have to, right? I can't sit here and obviously there are things I would rather see from him than I don't want to see a first pitch fastball ambushed by Yandy Diaz. I don't want to see the last pitch of both of his outings get taken for a homer.
Yeah.
One went to right yesterday. One got destroyed to left in his first outing by Alejandro Kirk. The Kirk one was a cutter. Not sure what got hit out yesterday by Richie Palacios. Either way, a guy in need of a mental health bounce back ended his first two spring outings in the worst way possible for someone who needs positive reinforcement. Not that the fans owe him positive reinforcement. Not that we need to turn the discourse around and give him a standing ovation. Just saying that if you care a little bit about Rodon's mental health, you can't be thrilled that both games ended in that fashion. That's why I was honestly a little heartened by the interview after the game, which was a little bit awkward with Jack Curry, but we'll talk about that later. I don't need him rearing back just to prove to me or Joe Sixpack or Randy Miller that he can hit 97. Randy Miller, by the way, in a lunkhead contest with Ben Verlander, wrote an article about how somebody called Rodon a bum in the crowd yesterday. You know how many games at Yankee Stadium from 1950 to 1995, somebody called somebody a bum from the stands? I'm going to go with 100%. That is not an article. You're not helping if you're like, oh man, I heard a drunk heckler call Carlos Rodon a bum. I think that's my story for tomorrow. Give me a break. So much happened on the field to address. We still haven't gotten to the bottom of how many cutters he threw in his private bullpen session. We still haven't really gotten to the bottom of how he feels and how comfortable he is letting it rip. I would love if somebody would go into these supposed bullpen sessions that occurred when The Athletic was there observing him earlier before the games began, saying he's throwing 97 right in these pen sessions and his velocity has been the talk of camp so far. I've been told he could do it. I haven't seen it yet in the games. That's what's a bummer. If you look at his spring velocity from 21 and 22 when he was healthy, He didn't get it up to 97 in the spring either. He didn't even really get it up to 95. He peaked at 95.9 in his first start of the spring, peaked at 94.8 yesterday. That would seem to me to indicate he's kind of right on track with velocity, though he did say yesterday he did not have his best fastball. And he certainly didn't have it. But was his best fastball that he was referring to the 95.9, or was it the 97? Like, did he lose a mile an hour, or did he lose 3 or 4 off that peak? Because he doesn't want to sit that high in spring training. I get it. And honestly, between the home runs yesterday, what he did was impressive. Pitchability, working on a 4-pitch mix after being beyond predictable last year. Right? Everybody knew fastball, slider. The slider count, you're getting a slider. The fastball count, you're getting a fastball, and it's 94, 95 instead of 97, 98. And if it's over the middle, it's probably getting hit out. Yesterday, he was mixing in that cutter effectively. Got a lot of soft contact in the second and third. Ended his start, obviously, with a thud and needs to maintain it for longer. But there were encouraging signs with the secondary stuff. I like that he's working on being a professor. That said, best fastball. We can all debate what best fastball means. The bottom line is, last year, when he was a disaster, he was grading out positively on his fastball. 116 stuff plus, commensurate with what he was throwing in his Cy Young contending campaigns the 2 years prior. Yesterday, 93, average is 100, well below average on the heater. If he was getting knocked around when he was predictable with what actually was an above average fastball but didn't look like it because everyone was sitting on it and location was terrible, he is going to get nailed if that fastball has taken another step back. So what we should be writing about, instead of saying fan hates Rodon at public baseball game, what was he working on in the bullpen session where he gave up all those home runs internally? And two, how comfortable does he feel letting it loose with the fastball? Why was he willing to go to it in bullpen sessions but not a game? Does he feel less healthy and strong and put together now than he did 3 weeks ago? Because that's important. And I'm not going to outright call someone a liar for saying that he was sitting on 97 on the gun in bullpen sessions and is no longer doing so. I'm sure that happened, but what changed between then and now? Did anything change? Did his back lock again? Is he still iffy on the mechanics? What can we do to get back to the place where he was when he reported early in January and February? Is he just holding back while he tinkers? That would be nice to know as well, because what he said in the interview to Jack Curry, I'm pretty good at this when I'm healthy. Absolutely true. When you're healthy, you are pretty good at this. Pretty massive caveat, though. And since you weren't very good yesterday and your fastball looked pedestrian and the metrics said your fastball had taken a step back from last year when it was getting rocked, how are you feeling right now? Has anything changed since the beginning of camp? Because that we need to know, instead of writing about a drunk fan who booed him at a game that didn't count.
Yeah, I just like feel like we're being lied to with the bullpen session stuff and not seeing the results. So the results are being reported, and then it couldn't be further from the truth. What's concerning here, and which is why I do understand the frustration. Roberto, it's possible that he's hurt. I don't know. Again, we had an undiagnosed chronic back issue last year that couldn't be identified. So don't know what that is, but I get why people are mad. You look at the numbers. Before he came to New York, he allowed fewer than one home run per nine innings. Like, comes to New York and gives up 15 and 64 innings. That's over two per nine innings. That's 2.1. That's terrible. So whether it's the velocity, whether it's the location, I don't know. Look, I'm fine with his fastball being 94, 95 if he can get it elevated up in the zone and deceive hitters' eye lines and intimidate them in different ways. Like, at that point, you have to, if you're losing some velocity, you have to adapt on the command front, be able to dot corners and use your command to your advantage. But I don't know. I literally don't know what's going on, because you have the issues last year that are like, even if he does have, you know, theoretically in between, it's a clean outing. Like, yeah, sure. He rebounded from the first one. Yeah. Or no, he got through the first, what, 2 2/3 innings clean in his first outing. And then yesterday he has a nice, you know, in between the bookended home runs, he has a nice showing, but home runs are bad. Home runs are the worst thing you could like. I don't have to explain it to you guys. And this is a newfound bugaboo. This was never an issue for him. So this is where you throw your hands up as a Yankees fan. And look, it happens with other teams that sign players to big time deals. But it's just funny because you look back on this deal for Rodon, and you know that if the Yankees pass on him at that price, everybody's saying, "Oh, what happened to the Yankees? They don't want to pay for free agents anymore."
Couldn't bunch find $160 million for a guy who wanted to be here. Are you kidding me, Cy Young kid?
And then you do it, and then he develops an issue that has never been an issue before. Now it's like, oh, look at that dumb contract the Yankees gave out. This is the dumbest team ever.
So, they should sign Blake Snell for the same contract. That dumb contract they just did. They should sign a five-inning pitcher who was bad from 2019 to 2021, 2022, whenever he was bad, but before the Cy Young seasons. It's again, this is Yankees disease. This is what I've been – the Knicks had Yankees disease too. They just traded for Bojan Bogdanovic and Alec Burks from Detroit, who – look like they've never played defense in their lives. And it's like, oh, well, where was that in Detroit? It wasn't. They've just gotten worse over the course of a week. I'm surprised that Brian Cashman didn't make those Knicks trade deadline acquisitions. And then this is another one where all of the geniuses with the Captain Hindsight geniuses out there are like, look at Rodon. He never pitched a full season until 21 and 22. And then he cashed in. Hey, you're not wrong. But what were his injuries back then? Certainly not this chronic back issue that developed between 22 and 23. So if you thought he was going to be injury prone over the course of this contract, you were working off previous data. You're not wrong. But if you saw this coming, you're lying. You did not know he was going to develop a new condition year over year. That is not something that you knew. I'm sorry. And I had to point that out like a stickler on Twitter over and over again. Because so many people are doing the, like, Captain Hindsight, oh, man, I didn't want my team to get Rodon. That was such a bad contract from the jump. No, no, it's actually, you didn't want your team to get Rodon, maybe. That's possible because of arm and shoulder and Tommy John and all the complications. You had no idea the condition of his back. You didn't. And so this has nothing to do with why you didn't want Rodon. And you're probably lying about not wanting Rodon, by the way, because he was top 10 in Cy Young in 21 and 22. Back-to-back years, you definitely wanted him. I wanted him. I unapologetically wanted him.
And it's a good deal. It's not a bad contract.
I still want him. I'll still defend him.
This is the contract you look for starting pitchers, somewhere, you know, in that $150, $175 million range. Like, I love Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole costs $36 million a year on a $324 million contract. That is massive for a starting pitcher. That is massive for somebody who plays anywhere between – you know, 28 and 32 games a year. It's a fraction of the season. I understand the value of starting pitching. Somebody has the ball in their hand. They're dictating more than likely the outcome of the game. So the value there is a little bit more. It's elevated compared to other players, and I get it, but it's a large expenditure for somebody who only plays a portion of the season. So like when you can get somebody of Rodon's track record, not the greatest in the world because of his injuries, but the potential has always been there, and it looked like he finally harnessed it for two straight seasons. And then you have that stretch of, like, I know he dealt with, what, injury issues in 2021, but, like, he only missed 6-7 starts. That's not horrific, obviously.
And I'll pay what it costs to have him, by the way, for 140 elite innings, which is what he gave in 2021. If you told me right now, Rodon's going to be there for 140 innings. Sorry, you can't pick and choose if they come in September or April. I would say, I know. I wish I could, but I can't. They would say, would you pay him his current contract for – I'll pull up the stats because he was absolutely insane that year. So people
– I have it right here. 2.37 ERA, 0.96 whip, 2.65 FIP, 12.6 strikeouts per nine. Mm-hmm. And 185 Ks at 132 and two-thirds innings. And it's like the Blake Snell argument too. It's like, yeah, I would give Blake Snell $175 million if I was guaranteed to get 140 to 130 to 150 ace-like innings.
Yeah.
If he's on the mound for look, this is what you got to pay for as a big market team. You got to be able to stomach these types of risks. And yeah, I in hindsight, 10 times out of 10, I'm paying that money if Rodon is giving me those 24 starts. I know, and is available for the playoffs. That's another caveat that needs to be included there. I wouldn't even say I need guaranteed playoff success because I think he has no playoff experience. Am I wrong about that? Oh, he has
precious little.
Yeah, and it's not good. No. So like availability for the playoffs, just give me this rotation on paper with Gerrit Cole, Carlos Rodon, and whoever comes after him, and that changes the game. It's an intimidation factor. It makes the Yankees feel like they're, you know, over-prepared for what's to come because the postseason's been a gauntlet for them dating back to 2017. A lot of factors here that should have turned out for the better, and now this is where you sit here and you're like, all right, how much worse can it get? And I know we typically say that, and then things get a lot worse, but, like, sure. Really, how much worse can this get?
Yeah. Right now, it's the worst contract they've signed in a decade, although I did go back and do the pitching additions, the Yankees pitching additions, both free agency and in trade since 2009. Like, if people don't understand why we're frustrated, it's because the offense has been the problem the last couple of years, not the pitching, I understand. And they revamped the offense with Alex Verdugo and Juan Soto and Trent Grisham, and Anthony Volpe looks like a new player, and so does Anthony Rizzo. I read some reductive analysis, like, if last year's Rizzo starts to regress full time, oh boy. And it's like, last year's Rizzo had no brain and couldn't see, so I don't expect to see that.
That wasn't a real baseball player.
That was not
projectable whatsoever.
It might as well have been your dad playing baseball for the year.
My dad sucks at baseball.
Yeah. I'm saying every viewer and listener's dad sucks at baseball. But here are the pitching additions since 2009. 2010, Javier Vasquez. 2011, Freddy Garcia, Bartolo Colon on random flyer contracts. 2012, Hiroki Kuroda. That worked. 2013, nobody. 2014, Tanaka and Brandon McCarthy midseason. And Tanaka, we all love him. A little boomer bust because he partially tore his UCL in the middle of that first summer and lost miles an hour off his fastball. So you'd chalk that one up as a win. But, like, did we even really get Masahiro Tanaka we were promised? It's kind of a playoff dog, but not really. 2015, Michael Pineda, Nathan Eovaldi. 2016, nobody. 2017, supplement things at the deadline with Sonny Gray. 2018, J-Hap and Lance Lynn come by midseason. 2019, blockbuster offseason trade for James Paxton, using players who were, again, off the table in the Manny Machado conversation at the deadline. 2020, Gerrit Cole, smart people. Thank you for doing that. 2021, Jameson Taillon, Corey Kluber for a lot of money. 2022, deadline help. We need it. Let's bring in Frankie Montas. 2023, Rodon signs, in 2024, Marcus Stroman. The jury is out on there. It is almost impossible to add a collection of worse pitchers via free agency and trade. Some of these people are fine number fours. Most of them are number five disasters. And this is, again, 15 years of Brian Cashman trying to supplement this rotation. Pitching hasn't even been the issue the past couple of years, really. The bats go cold when they reach October, but it's not like every time they've had the chance to supplement the staff, they have picked the wrong horse 90% of the time. Good job betting on Gerrit Cole. Like, congrats on the scouts who uncovered Gerrit Cole after he struck out 380 people in 220 innings in Houston in 2019 or whatever he did that year. But my goodness, that is an awful track record. And I don't want to add, Rodon was the perfect fit at that time. Fire breather, stuff matched up, peaking, Matt Blake pitching lab, etc. And if he breaks down with an unrelated injury at this point in time, you know, that was unforeseen and certainly not foreseen by doctors and surgeons, that would really be the cherry on the little sundae of deep Yankee fan frustration. How were you feeling when you saw Rodon after the game yesterday say, when I'm healthy, I'm pretty good at this? Because I was honestly glad to not see his confidence shaken. But also, if you were the kind of viewer who was frustrated by seeing him say, I'm pretty good at this after being pretty bad at this for a year plus and sitting at 93, I wouldn't fault you for being upset by that either, I would say.
I'm not upset about anything. I mean, I don't know. It kind of did remind me of Cashman. Cashman's little craziness where he was telling everybody, well, we're pretty fucking good at this. We got a good group of people. And it's like, yeah, I know. Like, I know you're a good GM, man. Like, you've lasted in the league for 25 years. There's a lot of success. There's a lot of There's a lot of great moves under your name. There's championships under your name. Some of them come with, you know, asterisks when you're looking at how the team was built prior to Cashman arriving. But no doubt he supplemented those rosters and he went out and he did what he had to do to make, you know, to maintain the Yankees as a winner. But same thing with Rodon. It's like, we know you're good at this, man, but you're not right now. And I don't know what's going to fix that. There are factors here at play where, yeah, we know you're a good pitcher, but clearly there was physical stuff holding you back last year. So, like, you can't be good if you're physically unable because you're unavailable. And there's some mental stuff at play too, when you consider the back injury that is a phantom back injury, when you look at how he handled a couple of moments last year in New York when stuff kind of boiled over. So I'm glad he knows that there is that ability within him to unlock it and be who he wants, you know, who he was not too long ago. Again, this was a year and a half ago. But it doesn't really do anything for me.
No,
I guess it's nice to see. It's nice to see he didn't blow up, but like, I can't set the bar low for these people like this. Like, you're in New York, different standards. Like, you got to be good in front of the media. You can't lose your shit. You can't have meltdowns. You can't say the wrong thing. And I know it's more difficult, but it's part of the job. And that's why the bigger contracts typically come in New York. There's a lot more to handle. So look, get it together. Hopefully the journey is less painful than it was last year, and we'll get to where we need to be, hopefully. But yeah, that doesn't make me think he's in a better place mentally than he might have been, you know, 4 months ago.
I mean, he definitely had to take a sabbatical at the end of last season and go to a ranch to stop thinking about baseball. He comes back, he's got rave reviews in February, but again, probably the worst thing that could have happened for him is getting rave reviews on bullpen sessions we all never saw. Because then what we saw is more of the same. I mean, again, not brutal yesterday. The results, it's a results business, but not in spring training.
Yeah.
Second and third innings I liked. I really did. But even the second and third innings were not the Carlos Rodon we were sold with. The fastball's not there. He's not that guy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
First inning velocity is like, okay, you need a couple, you need four or five batters to get there. Wasn't getting there. So what's going on? What's happening?
I mean, previously he has been the kind of guy who raises his velocity as the game goes on. Yeah. He'll often start at 94, 95 and end at 97. I would have liked to have seen him rear back once, but if he doesn't feel comfortable and healthy doing that, then I get it. But also, God, do we have a guy who can't rear back and hit 97 when he needs it anymore? Like, cause his back feels weird because he just can't get there. So, we're not going to have these questions answered, like you said, for several weeks now, if not a couple of months. And I'd like to see him in game action in the regular, just get him to opening day. I do not want to hear an arm fatigue thing, a bunch of nonsense before he even gets to opening day. Though again, pretty comfortable with Will Warren, pretty comfortable with Luis Gil, pretty comfortable with Cody Poteet. Like, I would rather see any of those people than a last-second, high-profile, high-dollar addition. Let Blake Snell go to the Giants and or. You can't go to the Giants and Angels, but let him go to either the Giants or the Angels. Let Jordan Montgomery end up in a small town, which is what he said he wanted yesterday, according to Buster Olney on the Michael Kay Show. Don't need that in our lives.
What's small town?
He said he's hoping for a small, you know, a small market team like Texas or St. Louis. Although Texas is
small market.
Massive. I guess just not New York, not Boston, not LA, not Atlanta. There's a market for everybody, but so you got to take the money eventually and go ahead and pitch somewhere. But look at what happens when you pay a pitcher too much just because you're like, we need innings. I don't even care anymore. You pay an uninsured $19 million a year contract to Lucas Giolito coming off a 5 ERA and whoopsie daisy. He's got Tommy John and he's going to opt into a player option for next year too. And then you got yourself a rehabbing James Paxton weighing down your payroll for a team that already doesn't want to pay any money. So to the maximum. Anything else we can talk about? Can we have some fun today? Is there anything else we can discuss? Maybe a little Spencer Jones, some joy in our lives.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Love Spencer Jones. Spencer Jones reassigned to minor league camp.
Yep.
No surprise there, folks. If you were, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you had to feel that. But
I am sorry.
Yeah, we think we said it last episode or two episodes ago. Like, he was never making the opening day roster. You look at Jason Dominguez's spring from last year, and holy hell, like the lobbying for him to make the opening day roster was among the loudest it's ever been for a prospect in, you know, the last 10 years. And the Yankees didn't budge at all. Again, they want to see their prospects progress properly throughout their minor league journey. Spencer Jones still has a little bit of work to do after getting the bump from high A to double A. And there's no need to rush his development at this point. The Yankees finally got the amount of outfielders that they need after not employing any from, 2020 to this offseason. So, obviously, Jones, in theory, could have been a fun addition as a roving outfielder DH, but they need him getting everyday reps. He's not getting everyday reps if Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, and Alex Verdugo and Giancarlo Stanton are your three outfielders plus DH. Trent Grisham is also a very good baseball player for, defensive standards and his ability to boast some power as a lefty. So, Spencer Jones reassigned. He will not be making the big league camp, but how many good signs here? First of all, he was asked by Brian Hoke about how he was handling the Aaron Judge comps. Mm-hmm. Which we kind of poo-pooed because it's the lowest hanging fruit comparison you can make.
Two guys are big.
Yeah. Yankees draft big outfielder. Could he be Aaron Judge? They are of similar size. Okay, cool. Sure. But like, why are we doing that to a 21-year-old? Why is Jason Dominguez being compared to Mickey Mantle and Mike Trout as a 17-year-old? I don't know why people do this. It creates unfair expectations. It oftentimes doesn't allow the prospect to focus on the journey of developing and absorbing everything, understanding how this is going to affect, your life, your mentality, rising through the ranks as a professional baseball player. And then you have this added stuff to deal with. But Jones said, it was nice to be compared to Judge, and he's flattered by it, but he wants to be his own guy, wants to trailblaze his own path. And I think that based on his ascension, he's kind of dealt with it fairly well. I mean, obviously he hasn't blown the doors off, but he's had a very good track record thus far. Living up to the hype, I would say so. Not every prospect is going to be OPSing 900 and flashing the five tools on a nightly basis, but Jones has done good enough as a first round. What was he, 2022?
First round pick? Yeah, summer 22 when I was in I was in Los Angeles, California, enjoying the All-Star festivities. And I remember Jones being picked, and I remember just being like, you guys pulled off a cool one. Like, I don't know if he's going to be good or not, but I know you're probably not going to do better at that draft slot, which is something I don't always say about the New York Yankees. And that summer I was like, yeah, that's probably the move right now, is getting Jones in the system. And so far, so good.
Yeah. And what were these swing stats? I forgot. You wrote it yesterday, and I...
61 swings this spring without a whiff. Are you kidding me? Like,
not a single whiff?
Like, he struck out a couple times on questionable calls, all called strikes. But somebody who struck out 28.9% of the time was his strikeout rate last year. By far the most worrisome thing about him. He also didn't hit for as much power as he was physically capable of, because he wasn't lifting the ball enough. So mid-tier season last year, OPS in the 700s, at 786, I think, overall. Don't quote me on that, even though you should be able to quote me because I'm supposed to be an expert. But I think it was 730 in limited sample at AA, 780 overall. Fine, not great. And a reason for people to troll him over, like, what are people talking about? Five-tool talent? He couldn't even OPS 800 in the low minors. I get it. Hit the ball on the ground too much. So the Yankees were handed this very tough package of, you got to increase the amount of fly balls and his usage of his power next year, but you got to cut down on these Ks. Not cut down to zero. We're not asking him to cut down to Tony Gwynn. We're just saying 28.9 at the lower levels of the minors, little rough. Let's see what we can do while also increasing the power. You're in some ways asking for two things that usually work hand in hand, you know, power and strikeouts. You're asking for one to go up and one to go down. It's a tough ask. He's got a lot of work to do this offseason to get right. And what do we see at spring training? He lifts and separates on a 470-foot home run, and he does not swing and miss one time before being demoted. It's the opposite of the way that they handled Rodon. They got him out of there at the perfect timing. No swings and misses whatsoever, hitting in the mid-400s. Everybody who watched him is impressed. No time for those numbers to go down, and spring numbers always go down. Juan Soto's not going to hit 700 all spring, not going to hit 700 in the regular season. Yordan Bebas was the talk of camp last week, and I don't think he has a hit in a week. Now he's got those two homers or whatever, and he's hitting like 100 or whatever. Hasn't changed my opinion of him as a prospect, but they got Spencer Jones out of there before any of the bloom came off the rose, and allowing us to all talk about how, man, no whiffs? Is none good? Because none sounds good. And now we get to have this conversation. He'll be back for spring breakout, the prospect showcase that'll occur next weekend. So anybody who wants to watch the Yankees top prospects, that's a pretty good opportunity to do so. You've got Jones and Warren and all those guys you've seen already trying to crack the big league roster, but also Henry Leland and Roderick Arias from the Florida Complex League will be there. If you want to finally get a look at some of these 18-year-olds you've heard so much about, Jones, a college bat with precious little experience, will be participating in that showcase as well. And like you said, not a surprise he was reassigned. Glad they gave him the window of opportunity they did. Now he will be starting the season at AA, hopefully at AAA by end of year, and hopefully up for Major League consideration next season. But no need to rush him. There's never been anyone who deserves to be rushed less, especially with the outfield the Yankees have and Jason Dominguez returning and Trent Grisham to play backup duty. Just let Jones be Jones this year. Keep him as far away from Aaron Judge as you can in the comparison columns until he's ready, which will hopefully be next year.
Yeah, and Roberto wants to trade him for Dylan Cease. Unbelievable.
These comments who want to see Dylan Cease in pinstripes.
Can
Dylan Cease play the outfield? Does Dylan Cease have five tool power? Nobody told me.
You got to give to get, but you also got to be a little bit smart. I'm not against trading prospects, but you see somebody like that elevate in spring training against better competition than he's faced pretty much his entire career. I like the sound of that. Spencer Jones, good guy. Hopefully we see him relatively soonish, but let him get his footing underneath him this year. And let's talk about some other nonsense. Man, Carlos Rodon, we were dealing with that. We still are. Now imagine if the Yankees had signed Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He put up a spring start like he did yesterday. What would the reaction be? I know Dodgers fans are probably going through it right now with some rivals giving them shit, but they have so many other good things going for them that it's probably not really too difficult to deal with. But man, that was not good, especially after Yamamoto's first start where he was kind of outed for tipping his pitches. Maybe teams picked up on that. I don't know. But that was, not great.
Well, the tipping pitches stuff was funny because the announcers said, the Dodgers announcers were like, hey, probably no big deal, but we can, see what he's working with from the center field camera. He's probably going to have to work on that at some point. And a lot of people in the aftermath, because everybody defends the Dodgers and nobody defends the Yankees. Right. Haven't you noticed that, by the way, when the Dodgers flame out of the playoffs, everyone rushes to write their columns about how the process was still sound. And when the Yankees flame out of the playoffs, it's like Brian Cashman's a dumbass. And I get it. And I think Brian Cashman is kind of a dumbass sometimes, but give me a break. Right. So the announcers go, hey, we can see his pitch grips and he's probably going to have to work on that. And everybody rushes to go, well, they can only see them using center field cameras. Those aren't typically accessed by teams during the regular season, unless they have an Astros like cheating scheme. Well, guess what? I think people were able to get a look at the center field camera shots because Yamamoto's second outing, he was let down by his defense. Gavin Lux made some shoddy plays at short. Max Muncy got eaten up at third base, but your defense doesn't cause walks. Three innings pitched, three walks for Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Six hits, five runs. Do spring training results matter?
No.
No. Is Yoshinobu Yamamoto a bust?
Bust!
No. If Yoshinobu Yamamoto was on the New York Yankees, we would be hearing this all day, every day, from all corners of the world. Remember when Gerrit Cole gave up four home runs in that spring game to the Tigers in Lakeland?
Do I?
I don't want to, but it was right before the pandemic. Right after we signed him, and he got rocked by Akil Baddoo and a couple other Tigers bench pieces. I heard about this for 48 hours. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Buster only, by the way, on the same appearance on the Michael Kay show yesterday, where he was talking about Jordan Montgomery and where these people want to land, mentioned that Yamamoto, the most attractive thing about his con, the reason he got so much money and the reason he had so much interest was the age, was 25. Of course. But he also said that some clubs think it might take a 3-year adjustment period for him to get acclimated to what it takes to succeed in the States. And that's baked into the contract and that he might not peak or figure it out till 28, but they were so excited by how young he was to get this long runway. That is not how this contract has been discussed ever since he joined the Dodgers. People have been calling them a super team. People have been saying 120 wins in the World Series are bust. I have never heard someone say the Dodgers signed him this deal, expecting him to take 3 years to get ready to really dominate in Major League Baseball. And again, I ask you, if the Yankees had paid $350 million for Yamamoto and beaten Gerrit Cole's deal, and then insiders started saying as he was struggling in spring training that the goal was for him to be good in 2027, people would have lost their minds. So we're just here to reality check everybody. I'm sure he'll be good. The stuff plays. Maybe not good enough to get a standing ovation after his first live BP like he did at LA camp. But the stuff is obviously good. The stuff played in the WBC. But I don't think you'd be hearing accommodating words from analysts about a 3-year adjustment period if the Yankees had just splurged on him as the missing piece.
Yeah. And then you look like I did look on social while we're talking about this because I'm like, maybe we're off base. Maybe the Dodgers are actually getting flamed. The first tweet that comes up when you search Yoshinobu Yamamoto is Pitching Ninja. Just the caption is 5 of the 6 hits off Yoshinobu Yamamoto yesterday. And like they were, some were soft contact. One was a bunt against the shift. One was a questionable defensive play by Max Muncy. Okay, does that matter? Like, that's it. You got you got dinked and dunked, essentially. Like, if Gerrit Cole gets dinked and dunked, that is that's grounds for being made fun of. He gives up a home run to Daniel Vogelbach and is asked about it after the game, and he's shit on for 3 days.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm not against the positivity. Hey, if we want to look and examine Yoshinobu Yamamoto's really bad start and maybe read between the lines instead of being like, oh, he gave up six hits. Oh, it was three runs. Oh, he walked three batters. We understand that there is stuff to parse through and there's layers to some of these discussions, but let's do that for everyone then, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe for us one time.
One time? Can we do it? Well, you're a crybaby if you want things to be fairly correct. Examined. Yeah.
If I want someone to be nice to me, I'm a baby.
Yeah, exactly. You get it. You get it. Yeah. No, if you want at any point anyone to examine things with the full data available in the
context,
you are in
fact. If you want someone to be logical, you are a crybaby.
You're being a baby. You're being a toddler. I mean, look, a lot of trolls out there on the internet. Okay. So it is what it is. But there you go. That's our Yamamoto update. We don't have him. who we do have, someone that we do have is Juan Soto. We have him for the full year. Maybe
it's not long enough, though. It's just a year.
It's not long enough. It's a bad trade. You never trade for a future Hall of Famer for a year. A year is not a real length of time. When a player is on a roster for a year, that year doesn't count. The only year that counts is next year. Juan Soto has left our friend Sal Licata again in preparation mode. He's got his fork and knife and a little Mets bandana around his neck like a napkin, because Buster only said yesterday, a couple days ago during the Yankees-Mets spring training game, that the detente might be off. Soto is not Judge. He's not an established Yankee. And so therefore the Mets fully intend to make a run at him next year when contracts, quote unquote, melt off their books. Now, this should come as a surprise to absolutely no one. If you think the Mets aren't going to try to sign Juan Soto, you're off your rocker. However, you're equally nuts if you think the Yankees didn't acquire Juan Soto with the knowledge that other teams would attempt to sign him in free agency. I can't guarantee you that Soto is not going to be a Met, but I can guarantee you the Yankees are going to try pretty hard to retain him. And I can also guarantee you that if Juan Soto does chase the money and the Mets offer exceeds the Yankees and he goes and grabs it for a $30 million difference, he's going to be really bummed out when the time comes for him to introduce himself as a member of the New York Mets. We'll see how this year goes. If he wins a ring, Yankee fans might be more forgiving about that departure, but I don't think he's the kind of guy who wants to just leave this behind after only getting a taste of it with the Yankee fan uncles, with the Yankee Instagram redesign, with the excitement that he's showing after being a part of this team for like a month and a half. I'm pretty sure he's not itching to jump ship. He and Aaron Judge, I think, are going to have a lot of fun playing off each other this year. And if they don't, then best of luck to the New York Mets with what appears to be amounting to a problem. Someone who can't fit with Judge or Machado and doesn't want to be in Washington and wants to set contract records and beat out the contract of a guy who pitches at a Cy Young level and also hits 50 home runs a year. If that's the case, then enjoy his fourth stop in 4 years. But at this juncture, really like the guy. He really wants to be here. And I don't think we need to treat the Mets preparing to offer him in free agency as a done deal or any reason not to be extremely fucking excited about Juan Soto and the next year.
Yeah, I just don't need to be reminded about Juan Soto being arguably the most sought after free agent of all time, maybe. Like top five of all time. We know it's going to happen. It was a risk that the Yankees knowingly took on, and to ignore the fact that there would be people lining up the day the 2024 season ends to get in his ear would have been ignorant. I'm also sick of just being told about Steve Cohen's money. Like, what has Steve Cohen done? And sure, maybe I'm biting my tongue at the end of the year because he ends up signing Juan Soto. But again, if Juan Soto wants to leave for $75 million more and to potentially affect his legacy, then that's not my problem. And again, it's like a Yamamoto situation. The Yankees did what they did. Yamamoto wanted to go somewhere else. What are you going to do? But Steve Cohen and the Mets, like, I sympathize with the Mets. I don't hate the Mets. But what, again, what has he done? Botched Kumar Rocker signing after drafting him because of the elbow issue. Chickened out on Carlos Correa. Traded for Francisco Lindor and gave him $1 million more dollars to justify paying him in excess of Fernando Tatis's contract. Kodai Senga, $75 million deal, ends up being pennies compared to all the other ones. I get the Scherzer deals. The Scherzer Verlander deals were aggressive, and he ended up turning those into prospects, but you just spent $100 million on unproven commodities. I think those prospects will be good, but again, you never know when prospects are actually going to pan out, so you don't know what's going to happen. If that's the way he's using his money to replenish the farm system, I would say that's a gross misuse of billionaire money, where we were told that his actions in the open market would completely shift the, you know, the dynamic of the league and turn everything upside down. Newsflash, the owners don't want that. The other 29 owners do not want that. They don't want more of a Wild West than it already is with, you know, a lot of these Boris clients. I know this year it's, I guess, gone a little bit back in their favor, but again, has it? Shohei Ohtani got $700 million. Yamamoto got $325 million, never pitching here. So I don't know, but either way, like, until Steve Cohen actually makes a move that terrifies me, the Lindor trade was, again, that was like, that was akin to the Yankees trading for Soto, in my opinion, not like in the same magnitude, but it was like, oh, the Mets have to do this. Like, it's on the table. They need a shortstop. They have the money to pay him. They have the prospects to give up. Like, do this now. It's the logical move. Like, that's not a game-breaking move that is earth-shattering or changes the conversation around a franchise. That is something that needed to be done and was very much laid out for them to do. So, again, I've said again a lot, but again, trying to understand this, what is Steve, and he very well could be loading up for this offseason, right? It's possible. You got Max Fried as a free agent. You got Corbin Burns as a free agent. The stars are kind of aligning. Pete Alonso's future will be better, I guess, determined as the year goes on, whether they extend him or whether they trade him. They have $100+ million coming off the books in contracts if everything stands the way it is right now. So yeah, the avenue is there for Steve Cohen to spend money, but I haven't seen it yet. And I'm not scared by it. And all these reports feel like it's just, you know, it's fake boogeyman stuff. It's, oh, be aware, like, this is going to happen. It's like, first of all, I already know it's going to happen. Second of all, who's paying you to keep telling us it's going to happen? Third of all, like, who is reading this and being like, oh my God, Steve Cohen, the Mets in on Juan Soto?
They like
next
him?
Year? No.
They like him? The buzz around camp is they're interested in Juan Soto? Like, I mean, like, Buster, and get this, guys, I'm at Mets camp. I asked a couple of guys about future Hall of Famer Juan Soto, and they say would be fun to have on the team. Yeah, great. Good stuff, dude. Like, we'll deal with it when we have to, right? No doubt, no matter how this season ends for the New York Yankees, we are going to, it's going to be a wrap either in the postseason or with a ticker tape parade or at the end of 162 if everything goes very poorly. And the next day, we're going to get Mets-Yankees to battle over Juan Soto.
Yeah.
We just will. The 2 hours after the season ends, it'll be Uncle Steve Cohen has notoriously deep pockets, but Brian Cashman is also motivated to make New York a mecca of baseball. Will these two long-term friends finally butt heads over free agent right fielder Juan Soto's attempt to set a record setting? Yup, absolutely they will. I can actually write the column now, and then whenever the season ends, just fill in the date and say, after a playoff failure, or after a star-studded title run, or after a 162-game disaster, and then write the rest of the copy-paste what I wrote today on March 7th in there at the end of the year. The Mets want him. I think the Cubs want Juan Soto. I think Scott Boras wants some other teams to want Juan Soto. So you can rest assured you're going to hear some mystery teams. The Cardinals are rustling up the finances. The Phillies need one more player to get over the hump. The Red Sox would love to stick it to the Yankees with this Soto edition. You're going to hear some other teams involved. That's what happens when a megastar reaches free agency. But the Yankees acquired him first. He's on the Yankees now. He's not holding out. He's on an active roster, and he's hitting 700 with tanks. So powerful, they're making Oppenheimer retroactively question his decision to invent the nuclear bomb, and he's on our roster. They're giving they're revoking Juan Soto's security clearance. Robert Downey Jr. is taking it away because he's hitting too many long atomic blasts. So he's on our team for now. We get to watch him in our uniform, and Mets content creators like Sal Licata, and yes, he's a radio host, but he's a content creator, gets to sit there and go, I've never been more sure that Juan Soto will be a New York Met at the end of the year. You can do that. You can look straight to Cam and say whatever you want, because that's your job. Your job in a season in which the Mets are not trying to win baseball games is to sit there and retain as many clicks as you possibly can. Because you're thinking, I was hired to be the Mets guy in 2022. I thought we were sailing to a division title. I was wrong. The Braves came and got us. Last year, I got to be all blustery with Verlander and Scherzer, and neither of those guys could pitch, and we traded them both, and we are borderline tanking in 2024. How do I possibly retain the views and the metrics I had before the Mets gave up? Oh, I know. Pretend that Steve Cohen's pockets are limitless and talk about a player who might be on the roster next year, because this year isn't worth shit to you. So enjoy your rage clicks from Yankee fans, and enjoy your retweets and Photoshop Mets jerseys from the Mets faithful, because that's what the next 7 months of your life are going to look like. And we're just going to have to let you operate in your corner in timeout, like Oppenheimer at the end of the movie.
The dunce cap.
Yeah.
It's funny because Licata was actually critical of what I kind of just, and maybe I subliminally stole it from him, because he was talking about how, like, Steve Cohen hasn't really flashed the financial muscles that the Mets fans were promised. Mm-hmm. And now we're simming to the end of the year and saying, oh, $600 million, done deal for Soto.
I also don't know if you can't honestly tell me that the Yankees aren't going to offer $600 million too, because this aligns. Juan Soto is young, extremely young. This aligns with what the Yankees want to spend money on long term, lower AAVs. Juan Soto turns 26 this October. He's got 230 days before he turns 26. So if you want Juan Soto, you can have him pretty comfortably for 13 years.
Yeah.
Right? 14 wouldn't even be that much of a stretch.
You get 10 incredible years out of him, probably.
So let's say he wants $600 million. It's not over 10 years. It's over 14. $43 million a year, and you can backload it if you want. You can figure out a way how to do that. That wouldn't shock me at all. Monster deal. No kidding. It's a huge financial burden, but it'll be a lower AAV, not a higher one, because this is a, like Yoshinobu Yamamoto, 25-year-old entering free agency. This is a young man who's going to cash in and is going to retire with whichever team signs him. He's not signing a 7-year, $480 million deal. That's unrealistic. So it's going to be a lot of money, and it's going to be a long period of time. And honestly, if you tell me that the Mets are prepared to offer $600 million right now, I wouldn't count the Yankees out. I really wouldn't. Even if the Yankees come in at 550, I would say that that's probably a close enough gap.
Yeah.
That the Yankee mystique would be able to outweigh that. But I wouldn't even be shocked if the Yankees did go to 600. Ohtani already got to 700, and this is a guy who wants to be here.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess we'll put it this way. The Yankees fans will never spend a season wondering what's going to happen in November or photoshopping players into jerseys ever. That will never – it probably has never – well, it definitely has never happened, because the internet didn't exist when the Yankees had their most recent horrific – stretch of play, which predated 90, there was 93 that ended, or 94 that ended. The internet was not discovered by Al Gore just yet at that point. And for the rest of time after that, the Yankees have been a perennial contender. Have they cashed in on every opportunity? No, a lot of disappointments over that span, but never in a million years was this fan base at any point looking toward a next season or wondering what the team is going to do after whatever happens this year, because we don't really care about it. Yankees fans are dialed in every single year when spring training starts. I mean, when the offseason starts, they're excited for any moves that this team is going to make. They're ready to go with whoever's on the roster come, you know, spring training opening day. And then it's live and die by every single game. As is it healthy? No, but that's the reality. It's not, oh, we'll check in June to see if the team's contending. They probably won't be though, because they kind of stink. And then my feelings won't get hurt when they're actually bad. And then I can imagine fake things for the remainder of the year to make me feel good. And what I'm thinking probably won't come true anyway. So yeah, I guess enjoy that. Yankees fans will never do that.
Enjoy that. I have no interest in doing that. Planning a year ahead of your life is a sad way to live your life, because time on earth is precious. Thank you for joining us on the Yanks Go Yard podcast. You can find us here at 2 o'clock Eastern every Monday, every Thursday. I'm Adam Weinerb. You can find me on Twitter or X. Haven't been deplatformed yet. Fingers crossed. At Adam Weinerb, Thomas Carinante. Where can the Mets fans specifically find you?
At Tommy's underscore takes. Happy to talk. Like the Mets. Go to Mets, as Fernando and Roberto know. I go to Mets games. Hang out at Citi Field. Get all the food. Root for the Mets. Just kidding. No, I like Citi Field. It's fun. Hit me up. Reach out to us. The official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account at Yanks Go Yard FS. Head on over to the website. World Wide Web, YanksGoYard.com. Producing all of the relevant content there. We're covering spring training very closely. We are ready. Ready for opening day. 3 weeks from today. Holy shit. Exactly 3 weeks. March 28th, right?
Yeah.
March 28th is opening day. That's 21 days from now. 3 weeks. Math pod. Appreciate all the support, guys. Remember DraftKings. Code is Yanks Go Yard. Risk-free bet up to $1,000. March Madness is here. Let's do it. We'll talk to you guys on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern, live right here. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Have a great weekend, y'all. We will be here.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.